my son's efforts today against his mother are a sight to behold. He went out of his way to like tape over remote control sensors and tie HDMI cables together and put tape on faucets so that water sprays everywhere, replaced her hairspray with a mouthwash, if I'm not mistaken. He's done this before, too, and she always falls for it. So if you think that I'm the old boy guy, oh, you really have to meet somebody. Poor Ben is ahead of the game, though. He can already school both of his parents.
It skips a generation. Welcome to Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am so smart. I am so smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
You're that sweaty carpenter who hates me.
Visit us at IHateCritics.net, EveryonesACriticPodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is CriticsPod. Like us there, friend us, whatever you do on those sites. troll us. I guess that's the...
save that for your iTunes review.
Complain about us, complain about our opinions. I don't care.
I see no energy drink on Bob's stool tonight. It's going to be a long one, Canada.
I'm trying to do that potato thing again where it's like I'm losing another 20 pounds in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. I should do that like for 9 straight months.
Wait, so you like eat nothing but potatoes?
Yeah. That's how I became a vegan in the first place. I did it for 2 weeks. That 2 weeks, I was a total dick the whole time.
In case you were wondering why Bob hated everything for a while.
He wasn't famished, but it was definitely a potato famine of sorts because you were wanting other things other than potatoes. But after it, you were great.
Yeah, it's a lot harder this time, and I'm on day one. So, I've only had 3 potatoes today.
It's going to be a starchy show.
Do you get to eat the skin, too?
You have to eat the
skin. You have to eat the skin. Oh.
No.
You just eat them raw like an apple. Just
you can do
fold
that.
It back like foreskin. Present it to yourself. I'll end your potato diet right now.
Is that what you do with foreskin?
Fuck, don't ask me, man. I'd happily admit if that was the case, but I mean, I've got some get some advice.
Well, let's Google it. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, that's where you can listen to us and any of your podcatchers. Please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to us. Rate and review the show. We'll read your review on the air.
Make sure you mention if you have foreskin.
Yes. If you want us to write your review for us, say it's a starchy show. It's whatever you want to.
Welcome to the Potato Hour.
Yeah. And then Patreon. IHateCritics.net/Patreon. It's the best way to help support the podcast. There's also a PayPal link on the website, as well as our podcast merch if you want to support the show that way. And if you do get some of the merch, please take a picture and post it and share it, and we'll retweet it. We'll share it, whatever you do on those sites, because we're hardly ever on them.
Share your best potato image.
Don't do that.
Potato.
Oh, no.
Mary Magdalene.
Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara, and a story we've kind of heard before in several other different movies, but told in a very different way. Who's the director on this?
This is the... Oh, shoot. I'm going to not remember it now, because it says in the trailer that from the director of Lion with Dev Patel in it,
yeah,
and Nicole Kidman. I can't remember who that director is, but that is what they mentioned.
Right. And that was a solid... Sorry. That was a solid movie, and, you know, this guy has a good look, a good exceptional cast. So hopeful, you know, like I said, we've seen this story told before. How they're going to make it any different or put a new spin on it, we'll see.
I like the tone of this particular trailer. If I had nothing of a background on who Mary Magdalene was or religion in general, I think I would still be stoked for the trailer because this trailer is so emotional and effective. The part that gets me as a guy that likes movies is you have two really good actors leading this cast. And when it comes to religious films, sometimes that's the case, but within the past 30 years or so, every religious film has got the B team, so to speak, or sometimes the C team.
Quit being mean to Jim Caviezel.
I know. I was about to stick up for him a little bit. I mean, he has been good at times, but also
really,
I like The Count of Monte Cristo. He's good at that kind of thing. Frequency was fine. He had a nice little run there.
That was like 20 years ago.
It was. I did not say that anything good came of it. But yeah, I'm not a fan of Jim Caviezel now, but at the time, yeah, I could see.
I mean, he sold the injuries.
He put over the whips.
Put over the Jews.
I have a hard time reading anything that he says these days. Now he's a bit of a different dude, and I don't always align with what he's saying.
This is going to be rated R, so I mean, it's got that going for it, that it's not going to totally cater to a specific audience.
Yeah, the other thing about religious movies and why this one is so interesting, or spiritual movies in general, regardless of what you believe in, if a movie is effective at showing you what the principles involved were doing and the emotion behind that, then it can become akin to spirituality. I remember watching The Prince of Egypt at a particular time, and I know that it's animated and it's not everybody's thing, but it really kind of spoke to me as like, wow, this is actually special. I can see why people are into this. And this is a time where I had never gone to church or anything like that, really. So I'm kind of hoping that this lives up to the hype that I have in my head for it.
At the very least, Joaquin Phoenix doesn't choose badly. Yeah. He's pretty smart with the films that he chooses. I mean, in the last year, he's done remarkable work. He was in one of the best movies of the last year with
Sisters Brothers?
Not that one, the other one, with the hammer.
You Were Never Here.
You Were Never Really Here, thank you. Yeah, so him working with a good director, I'd trust anything he might do.
In 2019, Joaquin Phoenix will be playing both Jesus and the Joker in the same year. So, let that sink in.
Annabelle Comes Home.
Didn't see it.
Yeah, you did. I will say this. The only thing that I got out of this trailer besides the usual, like, stop just playing music swiftly to get us scared and jumping out of our seats and showing something that looks disgusting for a fraction of a second. The only thing about this is that you did see the Warrens in here, portrayed by Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson. Despite what we might think about the Warrens, I enjoyed the first Conjuring a lot. I still do. The second one is okay. This movie has them in it and seems to be linking back to the Conjuring. So at least these Annabelle films, as completely pointless as I understand that they've been, they're coming full circle now.
It seems like, though, that the Warrens like pop up and leave based on – that's kind of the impression I got from the trailer, because after they showed kids messing around in the little scary room – then it seemed to go to the kid's story. And I don't know, every time I watch these trailers, I try to, you know, think of when Sean complains about them. Why are they just moving pictures and popping up out of your sheets? And stuff like that. And it's like, anybody can scare themselves. So when you're home alone in a scary house, you're picturing when you look in the mirror, you're going to see somebody. But you never do, because ghosts aren't real.
Right.
But if you move, you make them show. You make them pop up, then it's scary to those who are scared by that kind of thing. But yeah, that's all I could think about while watching this trailer.
This doll is not voiced by Mark Hamill, whereas Chucky is voiced by Mark Hamill.
Yeah, they had an Oscar winner voicing Chucky before, now they got a Star Wars guy.
Hey! You tell me what Brad Dourif has done that is worth shit since that movie. And that was 1976? 77? Oh, man. Anything for a cheap Star Wars laugh, I tell you.
He's been several horror cameos since then.
same from Mark Hamill.
Exactly, he's a voice actor.
You remember we talked about The Last Jedi, and I was serious about the possibility of him being recognized for that performance because it was so different and clearly not what he wanted to do, even, and it was still convincing. So he's got a bit of an actor in him. It's just really, really way down.
He's okay, I guess. His best role is Jay and Silent Bob Strike
Back. Cock knocker.
I wonder if he's going to be in the sequel.
God willing.
Dora, the Lost City of Gold.
You know, it's funny. When I heard that they were making a live-action Dora movie, my eyes rolled so hard that it hurt. This trailer is really good. This is a really entertaining trailer. I give him props. It's like a Laura Croft movie for little kids. I dig it. Good on them. You know, they're making the best possible movie they can of something that is not an easy idea to do.
I will agree that I was surprised with the production value of the whole project. And the only thing that held me back wasn't Dora like a little girl? And in this case, she's in high school, so it seems like a cheap way to draw in another age group and not just call it a kids movie. Now, all of a sudden, it's an adventure movie, and you've got romance dynamics that are allowed to take place and stuff like that. So I luckily got spared Dora when I was
Doesn't sound parenting. Like you have. You seem pretty upset that they...
How dare they age up Dora?
You know, that's the end of my opinion, actually. Now that you say that, I don't know why I'm thinking that hard about it.
I am wondering, though, because, like, Dora predates my daughter a little bit. I mean, it was still around when my daughter was around, and even my son got the tail end of it, I guess, Diego. But, I mean... One, my daughter has no interest in Dora anymore. I can't imagine the high school kids that were around when Dora was around that would give a shit about this movie. So I mean, other than the fact that it looks like an action movie, is Dora still on Nickelodeon or whatever station it was on?
I'm betting they're going to relaunch, do like a big relaunch and try and get that going again ahead of the movie. So they'll reintroduce the character in that way.
I can definitely see that too, and there are action figures to sell, I'm sure as well, and toys and apps and things of that nature.
Because I mean, it was I thought the trailer was funny enough.
Interesting point that you make there about Dora about the new wave of Dora. A lot of her stuff is on YouTube Kids as well. The stuff that they did with her when she first came around, you can now see it as part of. Little videos on YouTube Kids. I know that there are young kids who are rediscovering Dora that way.
Yeah. My memory of Dora, not by watching the show, but is Saturday Night Live having a little sketch making fun of the show where she's walking with Boots the monkey. It's just fine. It looks like it's innocent. And then she turns to the camera like characters on these shows do, usually ask the kids a question, and she said, "Do you know why my daddy doesn't love me?" And stuff like that. It was, you know, something out of Robert Smigel's playground. So I'm sure the show is much better.
I mean, I could see it being maybe not quite as good as the Jumanji remake, but kind of in that vein. I just the backpack stuff alone, I thought was clever and funny enough to be like, I could sit through this if I had to. I don't think I will, but... And then The Dead Don't Die.
Yeah, Jim Jarmusch directing an almost mainstream zombie movie with kind of his vibe, a very sort of laid-back idea of a zombie movie with Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Chloe Savini.
Tom Waits.
Pop. Iggy Pop as a zombie. Zombie Iggy Pop.
Who likes coffee. Trailer of the year?
Maybe. You know, this is pretty funny. This is a pretty funny trailer.
My enthusiasm of it the second time watching it here was tampered a little bit because I had already seen it the one time. I love this trailer. Every other movie of his that I've either seen or watched the trailer for has not been nearly as interesting as what that was. So sign me up. I love the idea of Bill Murray and Adam Driver leading a movie together. That's an odd couple, you know?
And then Tilda Swinton have her own little side story going on. That's amazing. I mean... Everything about it just looks fantastic, and I part of me wished it was going straight to on demand so I could watch it this week, but it looks like we have till June or something like that.
Looks like it might be the rare Jim Jarmusch movie that actually goes to theaters. I don't think that's happened since maybe Broken Flowers.
I can't wait, though. All right, let's see. How are we going to start the show?
I have a radical idea. We'll cross the streams.
Excuse me, Egon. You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
You're going to endanger us. You're going to endanger our client.
Not necessarily. There's definitely a very slim chance we'll survive.
We'll go backwards since Dumbo is kind of the big movie and we'll mix up the classic. And we'll talk about a movie Sean didn't see. The Highwaymen.
So tell me about this movie.
I'll do my quick little Bob version of how I review movies because I'm not good at it. It is a movie that if you've seen Bonnie and Clyde is very boring and you're just waiting for it to the shootout to happen.
I mean, so negative review.
It's not. It's interesting for a while, but you know where it's going, and you just have I don't know.
All right. So who are the stars here?
We got Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson play two former Texas Rangers that are enlisted back in service by David Carroll Lynch. He's a governor's right-hand man, that kind of thing. And the governor's played by Kathy Bates, former Texas Governor Ma Ferguson, I believe was the name. And she was charged with trying to find Bonnie and Clyde in her state as well. There were outstanding warrants for them all over the place, of course. And these two former Texas Rangers, they don't have federal protection to go about as they please, but they do within Texas. Now, you know that they're going to do their own thing because they're former Texas Rangers. They're used to having a particular type of freedom to go about their way of law enforcement. Now, actually, I found this movie to be very fascinating because I didn't like Bonnie and Clyde.
Definitely better than Bonnie and Clyde. I agree.
Yeah, and you know what? I found that this was the correct way to tell the Bonnie and Clyde story because the notoriety is really the only important thing that comes out of that to me. All the people that they killed and all of the ridiculousness that they perpetuated at that particular time, whatever positive things came out of it, it was a wholly negative experience. So I would rather watch the story about the people that caught them and how they did that. And this movie it's directed by John Lee Hancock, who's an okay director and writer. I mean, he's done some things that I've enjoyed. The Rookie is okay. There's one that was a little closer to that I liked a bit more. I can't remember, but he's been around, okay? He's a native Texan himself. And what I liked that he was saying in this one, he focused a couple of times on the loyalty that people showed to Bonnie and Clyde. Despite the fact that these law enforcement agents, Costner and Harrelson, they were certainly not imposing to the point of being intimidating, if you ask me. I felt that they were interacting really well with everyone that they could until a certain point. Now, this loyalty, to me, it spoke to what people that don't have things are forced to do sometimes in order to exist. So the divide between the haves and the have-nots in 1934, it's just a different time now. And I felt that the movie was really smart to come from the point of view of the lawmakers and actually discuss the challenges of what lawmakers have to deal with, too. Costner and Harrelson are well-developed characters, and of course they're real people, but I felt that the movie spent the due amount of time understanding why Kevin Costner was as forceful as he was and why Woody Harrelson, why he was as lenient as he was, so to speak. You know, he's giving his mentor, his former boss, his partner, you know, a different perspective on this. He's saying that's the difference between us and them. We can't go that far. We can't push their faces down into the ground, you know. He adds a layer of humanity to it that, frankly, Bonnie and Clyde didn't have at all in the movie, that humanity. And I'm not sure that those people did either. But if all that one sect of society has is to look at something and say they're fighting for us, whether they are or not, that really rung true for our modern times. And I really don't want to get too political, but I felt that this film was definitely in the right place at the right time for me. I felt also that it was pretty beautiful, considering you're shooting a lot of dust fields in a lot of random homes in the middle of nowhere. I think this is outstanding stuff. I'm not really big on Woody Harrelson a lot. You guys have been aware of that, but he's really good in this movie. And Costner is just, he's playing the same role that he has with Elliot Ness and Wyatt Earp. Maybe even the Postman, maybe even John Dunbar from Dances with Wolves. He cranks this out all of the time. And this movie, though, is just a little bit different, to the point where his wife actually makes mention of, I knew who you are when I married you. And that was so refreshing, because I think it's the first time that I can remember seeing that line or hearing that line in a film. There's always that frustration. She's frustrated at him trying to go back out, but eventually she looks at him and there's mutual respect going on, and they say, and she says, I knew who you are when I married you. I know you're going to go do this. I'm not happy about it. Okay, great. Whether that actually went down like that or not, I don't know. Fictionally, it worked well for me, even if it is fiction.
Yeah, I mean, I found it to be pure fiction, the whole movie. I mean, it was definitely sensationalized from the Lost point of view, too, because there's a lot of the, here's how we used to do it back in the day, and now here's how they're doing it today. And it was, nothing's bad about it. I found it, while it did move the story forward, it was also repeating itself a lot too, and it just kind of longer than it needed to be. And really, you could fast forward 15 minutes and not miss anything.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I've not seen this movie, and yet it sounds like a John Lee Hancock movie, because he's the director of The Blind Side and The Founder and The Alamo, and all of those movies have the exact same problems.
And now that you say the Founder, that's what's coming to mind for me, is that movie would have been so much better if it had been a little tighter. And when I started the movie, I'm like, 2 hours and 12 minutes? I'll bet you we wish that this came under 2 hours. That's true. There's a bit too much going on. You could really have tightened that up. But for a film that's streaming that didn't go into theaters, you know, if I had seen this in the theater, and this was the only thing that I brought to the show for new releases this week, I would have been pretty satisfied.
Was it violent?
There are only parts of violence, but those parts are definitely violent. And gory, I might add. I mean, real life shotgun to the face is not going to go well for the other end.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has its audience, especially if you're a Kevin Costner fan or a Woody Harrelson fan. But, I mean, I don't think it'll stand the test of time like Bonnie and Clyde did, but I like this better. Bonnie and Clyde was really disappointing, but that's also kind of when we talked about when that movie came out, movies were kind of changing, and that was kind of the movie that was where it went from that theater actor yelling to the back of the room to actual acting.
Yeah, you're onto something there. Where you said those that like Kevin Costner, I almost thought to myself, those that like Tom Selleck would watch his westerns that only made it to TV, that kind of thing.
It's not that backhanded.
So there's like a spectrum here where that's the bottom, and maybe No Country for Old Men is like the top, where you've got a story like this. It's essentially a western of sorts.
Yeah. Do you recommend people watch it?
It's not a must watch.
Do you recommend people watch it?
I do. If you are looking for something, I think this will at least satisfy your minimum standards for film. And it gives you exactly what you want for Costner. He is exactly this character all the time.
The last three movies I watched on Netflix, I would watch the other two before I'd watch this one. That being The Dirt and the other one, Triple Frontier.
I'd go for this one over Triple Frontier.
But I mean, yeah.
Wow.
It's not a big, I'm not anti it, it's fine. Speaking of wives that know who their husbands are, The Beach Bum.
The Beach Bum with Matthew McConaughey, directed by Harmony Korine, who directed Spring Breakers. Tells the story of Moondog, a poet whose wife is a millionaire, Isla Fisher. just kind of subsidizes his genius, quote unquote, where he just basically his everyday life is just moving from one old style and some bud to the next old style and some bud.
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Whatever. I don't know. I don't know.
Hipsters everywhere just screamed out in terror. But we're no fine, of course.
I have no idea. I don't pay attention to beer. And I found it hard to pay attention to this movie. So maybe that might be the problem, too. I don't care about this. Nothing happens in this movie. The character doesn't grow. He doesn't learn anything. There's no arc. I don't know exactly what Harmony Korine is hoping to do here. Is he hoping to entertain, or is there any point to this at all? I assume it's meant to be entertaining, but I don't find this particular character to be all that entertaining. I found him rather dull. I don't really know what I was supposed to take away. I didn't really laugh. I've seen the joke about, you know, Snoop Dogg and marijuana before, and I've seen the jokes about Matthew McConaughey and marijuana before, and even mixing in Jimmy Buffett culture doesn't really do anything for me either. I just did not care about this at all. The most entertaining thing in the movie is Zac Efron's beard.
I did notice, because it's not perfect. If you're going to do it, just do it right. And it's like you clearly messed up spots of it.
Is that really even his hair, you think?
No. Well, it might have been, because he did. If it wasn't his hair, then that'd make it better. Because it's like, okay, it's not perfect. But I love this movie. To me, the point was, and it's not necessarily the best way of making the point, but it was simply a guy who chased what made him happy at any cost. And I think that's a good – that's more of a – I don't know. I think more – and maybe it's because I'm wanting to be more like that. Now, not necessarily with marijuana and Jimmy Buffett, specifically not with Jimmy Buffett. But there's just – sometimes you just get caught up in your work life and this and that, and – you're not putting yourself first. You're putting other things first. And this movie, I mean, that's what that character was. And he wasn't a genius, but they treated him like a genius because he followed whatever made him fun. And it didn't matter if he was rich or he was poor, he found the same amount of fun and happiness at both levels. And it wasn't really about him growing, because I think the point he was trying to make was he's already there. You're the one that has to grow with him. And at the same time, you know, people are dying, and but they're also all living life to the fullest when they die. So it's sad, but it's not. And I don't know. I found myself fascinated by that whole, what he was trying to do there. And I liked the character. I mean, I'll put him on par with Joaquin Phoenix and Inherent Vice, and, you know, right behind Bridges and the Lebowski. But that's
another aspect that I didn't care for about this, is that it felt to me like that was extraordinarily calculated exactly for that. And I felt that calculation in that character in trying to create the new dude for this generation. Like, fuck you. There's never another dude.
I felt that more in Inherent Vice than this. Because this is definitely, I mean, Matthew McConaughey's always kind of been that guy anyway. So I didn't really, I mean,
I think the storytelling and the direction, though, in Inherent Vice is so much stronger, and there's a lot more to that movie. The layers of that movie are a lot stronger than, because I don't feel there's any layers to this.
Well, they're doing different things.
Yeah, Inherent Vice does seem to have a story. After all, it's based on a novel, and there may be more than one novel involving this character of the Joaquin Phoenix plays. And I like that a lot. I mean, I haven't seen Inherent Vice since the first time I saw it, and I don't know why. Like, I would love to pair that with the Big Lebowski and with this, honestly. I really like this movie, probably more than I had any business liking. This is not my type of character normally. I would say, like, look at, he's not doing anything. But then again, even in a moment where Zac Efron is assaulting somebody, and that is the one problem I've got with this movie, he was just fine, you know, break the law, okay, fine. But hurting a guy and just, like, he's trying to go back and show that that's not the right thing to do, and it gets taken away from him anyways. But there's nefariousness to him. But what I liked about this character is exactly what you said in a different way. He's grown already as much as he's going to grow. And he's his own brand, and nothing is really going to stop that. And it's kind of like we are forced, we're forced to follow a particular path, or we measure our own happiness and success against that path. He's forged his own path. And that was the kind of enlightening, cool thing about the movie, even though it doesn't have a story. Like, I found myself entertained by it without the story, which I recognized is a little odd with me. I usually like a point to something. And in this case, the lack of a point was actually okay with me. It's more like a snapshot of a particular period of time. We've talked about those types of movies that don't really have a beginning, middle, and end. It's just, here's this section here, take it or leave it. I felt that the movie was at least true to the character that McConaughey was trying to develop, and just different enough than the dude. The dude's a bit more of a fantasy character, a bit more of a dunce in a way. This guy's got something to him. At least he's consistently dumb, or he's consistently above all of us. One of the two, okay. And this movie is definitely less of a fantasy. It's more of like an observation of this guy's experiences. I gotta tell you, I liked it enough to the point where people sitting next to me in the theater are talking audibly the entire time. I didn't even yell at them, and normally I do. So that just goes to show that I enjoyed it to the point where I'm currently calling it my number one favorite for the year, and that is weird. Really weird. I feel out of bounds with it.
It's top three for me. And I do think there's a point. I don't think there's a story, but I mean, I think, you know, the point is, I mean, he literally nothing upsets him. Like, his wife's fucking somebody else, and it doesn't bother him. He's fucking other people, it doesn't bother his wife, and they don't seem to have ever had that conversation. They just seem to be okay with it the whole time. There's a scene where, before the drunk driving, they're singing the song while they're kind of, he's carrying around this, whatever that is, some Bluetooth beatbox thing.
Yeah. But I thought it was a fanny pack at first, but
well, he had a fanny pack on, yeah, the whole time too. But the song was "What Happens If I Die," or something, the lyrics, something like that, and it was, that's it. That was kind of the line in the song, and that to me was a very powerful lyric, because it was like, I'm looking at the next thing. I'm looking at now. You know, it's not about what happened. You're kind of living for the moment. And I know that's a simple thing to say and do, but I thought this was a pretty original way of telling that story, and I just, or story, but you know, showing that message. And I think it's a good movie to see, and it's definitely certain people needed to see it more than others. At the same time, there's a lot of drugs. I did find, as much as I hate Jimmy Buffett, I did find it funny that Matthew McConaughey, Snoop Dogg, and Jimmy Buffett were on a boat together. But Sean ruined that joke to start the review.
Yeah, I don't get the Jimmy Buffett culture either, to the point where I've actively tried to not like be close friends with people that are Jimmy Buffett people. I don't get it, because I don't like the heat or the beach. But I do like margaritas. I mean, I guess I've got that going for it. Or his music. That's another one, too.
That's the main thing. If you don't like his music, you could like pot, the beach, the sun. The music's so bad that I can't handle. I mean, I'm not a pothead or anything like that, but I can't. But I did find it funny, him and Snoop Dogg on it. And they had a song. The three of them did a duet of sorts that I thought was pretty funny. But
it's got some particularly memorable moments, inappropriate wise, be it Martin Lawrence losing. Yeah, I can't really go into that, I suppose, but he meets interesting characters. It's like, I hate to say that it's a dude for the new ages. I think you're onto something there in what people might attach to the movie, or might get inspired to think of because of the movie, but it's different enough for me that I felt that they were two independent performances, luckily, because that means I can attach myself to three stoner loser guys with inherent vice.
Definitely like The Big Lebowski better, mm-hmm, but I would argue that had less of a point than this did. and neither one really had a story.
And that was a spoof heist type thing, right, with some pretty fantastical elements that are wonderful and elevated above this one, for sure.
Gloria Bell.
Gloria Bell. Now, this is one of the best movies of the year. This is from director Sebastian Lelio, who broke out with a Fantastic Woman 2 years ago, and then last year did Disturbance with Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. Brilliant, brilliant movie. And now here he's done a movie with Julianne Moore, who plays the character Gloria Bell, is a woman recently divorced. She's in her early 50s. She's trying to date again and move out into the world again and start meeting people again. And it's awkward and weird and uncomfortable, but she's, you know, forging ahead, and she's trying a lot of different and unique things. She's got a particular kind of disco that she goes to that a lot of people her age frequent, which it seems like kind of a California phenomenon, which is fascinating in its way. And the characters she meets there are all kind of interesting, all the same kind of guy, really. And until she meets John Turturro, and they begin this very strange romantic relationship that is very dysfunctional and not in any way typical. Like, it's not, it's romantic sometimes. It's also like just highly dysfunctional. He's got this, he's recently divorced himself, and he's got a family that just still like is blowing up his phone constantly, an ex-wife and two daughters who seem entirely dependent upon him, who keep taking up his time. And that's a strain on their relationship. And it's a very unique look at a life that you don't often see on screen. And Sebastian Lelio is such a compassionate and very thoughtful director who likes stories about people who aren't normally brought to the screen, like what he does with A Fantastic Woman, which is about a trans woman whose boyfriend passes away and his family doesn't want her anywhere near his funeral, and the harshness with which she's treated in that scenario. And then you've got Disturbance, which is about this very cloistered Jewish community and this woman who realizes that she's gay. And this longtime friend of hers that she's always been in love with returns for her own father's funeral. And there's a lot of complications there. And he's really unique slices of life, very specific places. And Gloria Bell kind of has her own specific place, this kind of Southern California place that's very unique. The soundtrack is amazing. It's this mix of disco songs from the late 70s and this great early 80s pop, including building up to the title song by Gloria Branigan, which hits at a moment that you don't expect, and really suddenly you're like, wow, that really hits. That song really does hit in this moment. And Sebastian Lelio is definitely a director to watch. This is one of my favorites of the year, right up there with Lords of Chaos.
Yeah, well, let's do our top threes right now. For me, it's Lords of Chaos, Us, and The Beach Bum. What would you?
Lords of Chaos and Gloria Bell.
Us not up there?
Us, yeah.
Us and The Beach Bum and probably something else. I currently can't think of it, and because I can't remember the theater films I've seen or Netflix stuff this year other than The Highwayman. I guess that means The Highwayman.
I would throw in Isn't It Romantic as well, which is a lower tier, but certainly one of my favorite comedies, straight comedies of the year.
I noticed none of us said Dumbo.
Well, now this is funny because I was accused multiple times of not liking Dumbo, even though I gave it a review that's like, it's good, it's fine. Dumbo's fine. There's nothing really wrong with Dumbo. It's a little bland, but it's basically just kind of fattening up a 65-minute animated feature to have, you know, human characters that it didn't have before, because the original cartoon, which we'll get to, is just animals, and not even really talking animals, aside from the mouse.
Not a whole lot of talking at all.
Yeah. getting an early review from Bob here. This one's got human characters, a couple of kids who are in a circus. Their mom has just passed away. Their father has just returned from World War I. He's played by Colin Farrell. He's returned minus an arm, and has not able to continue with his act in the circus, which is a horse act. His wife used to do it together, so he gets assigned to take care of the elephants, and one of the elephants is Dumbo, the newborn. And the Danny DeVito is the head of the circus, Max Medici, who thinks that Dumbo should be his, or could be his ticket to the big time, until he sees him, and he sees these giant ears, and he realizes, well, this elephant's useless. He's ugly. Nobody's going to want to see him. That's when the kids start playing with him, and they find that if they give him a feather, he can fly. And, of course, that makes him a huge star, and they meet Michael Keaton playing Johnny Depp, playing a character in a Tim Burton movie. and he's the villain. He takes him to the big city and puts him in a big top, and he's going to try and exploit Dumbo and keep him from his mom, and Dumbo wants to get back to his mom.
Yeah. You didn't have to see it, did you?
No, I made the choice to see The Beach Bum. I believe that I was correct in at least doing that part. I put myself through one.
It's not bad. There's nothing wrong with it.
It's fine. There's not a lot of Burtonisms in it.
There's a very mercenary quality to this. Like Tim Burton as director for hire.
I mean, other than Michael Keaton, like you said, right. Everything else was pretty...
Well, and Ava Green is directed to be Helena Bonham Carter.
A little bit, but even that's reined in. I know there's definitely true. I'm not disagreeing, but it's not as over the top as Helena Bonham Carter normally is.
But Keaton is playing Johnny Depp. Let's be clear.
Keaton's over the top, but it works. I like it. I mean, I don't have a problem with him, his character, and you know, I like the fact that it had the balls to do what The Greatest Showman couldn't do. And free all the animals at the end. I mean, in a way, it's kind of eye-rolling, but at the same time, I was like, oh, it's cool they actually went there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's fine.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's solid. It's a well-made family movie. It's inoffensive. Like I said, it's bland and kind of mercenary, you know, because Tim Burton is not working on anything original here, and he doesn't seem particularly invested in making this anything special. But in terms of just a solid by-the-numbers family film, it works.
Right. I'm wondering if I would have liked more Burtonisms or not. You know, in some ways... You know, you look at his Alice in Wonderland movie, and you're like, oh, maybe I don't.
God-awful movies, yeah.
But at least, you know, he looked like he was trying a little harder there. But this, maybe that's...
It looked like this was up his alley, where you've got misfits, freaks, so to speak, the circus atmosphere. I can imagine him taking the decorum of what circus is in our heads, where we see pinwheels and big tops and stuff like that, and making it grimy around the edges, you know, and showing the freaks being a family. It seemed to be well within his wheelhouse when they announced it. So, but it seems like there are no real calling cards here, and that's the only reason I would have been interested.
Mostly just the visual signatures, things that remind you of, like... You know, the colorfulness of a big fish or something like that.
But it's almost like like Sean said, a director for hire trying to be Tim Burton is more what it is than Tim Burton being Tim Burton. I don't know. But again, it's not bad. I think that just adds to it being bland. That and Dumbo is kind of it's an old story that even though you changed it a ton, which they kind of did, but it's still kind of the same thing. So...
There's some elements that it, you know, like the callbacks to the cartoon are cute.
Yeah.
The way they do pink elephants in this movie is very different. Dumbo doesn't get drunk or anything like that in this one.
We'll talk about that.
I thought that visual touch was nice, and there is they kind of work in some of the music gets in there a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, there's little touches that really call back to the original that were nice.
And my kids liked it fine, but they're right back to watching Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. <so. laughs>
It does seem to have slightly underperformed at the box office as well, despite being number one. As I saw, Disney was expecting maybe about a $20 million more gain from this weekend. And you compare it to their other live-action ones, under Jungle Book, under Maleficent, under Cinderella, etc. It was one of the worst performing
ones. And I will say, walking into the theater, my son wanted to re-see How to Train Your Dragon 3, and my daughter wanted to see Happy Death Day 2. So neither one of them really wanted to go to Dumbo. But I was like, Daddy's got a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed
classic,
Dumbo.
65 minutes.
I was so excited when I saw that. And then I watched it, and I was like, this is the longest 65 minutes of my life.
A lot of filler in there.
It's very abrupt. Minutes. Too. Like, the ending just arrives and is like, really? It's over?
I remember getting out my pom-poms and doing a cheer.
Forty-one. Disney feature with a flying elephant. Born to a circus and thought of as kind of a comedy act because of his giant ears. He becomes a, you know, eventually he doesn't fly till the end.
No. And in a lot of ways, this is a perfect week because, like the Highwaymen, you could kind of fast forward this movie and really not miss anything.
It's funny. Like, yeah, he's flying in the first act of the new Dumbo. And like here, he doesn't fly until the very end and then the movie ends. It's very weird.
Which part of me was kind of wondering if the Tim Burton one would have been better if they went that route. But I don't know. It was already bland enough with the flying. Maybe it wouldn't have been.
Sorry, I was just trying to pick out something from this movie that would register as this is a classic. I was watching as my wife is singing along to the songs because she knows them. I hadn't seen it since I was 3 or 4 years old myself. It's fine. But there are a couple of parts where I do the cringing. Like, the getting drunk sequence is an extended sequence of seeing phantom elephants and things in the sky. And it doesn't seem to register as appropriate for some reason. And I'm no prude.
Or have a point.
Thank you.
But you know what it reminded me of was the scene in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You're right.
Which, was there a point to that? No. I guess it's not for kids. But
true. And then Peach Bum has fireworks going off in the background.
There's a whole lot going on in that scene, but another time.
I don't know. And then the end, too. I mean, They're up in the tree and the crows and everything like that. There's something a little uncomfortable about the scene with the crows as well.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I felt like I was watching Disney's first attempt at pandering to everybody. We are definitely going to get all of our version of jokes and stuff in there and in our form of animation. The animation's actually fine. I didn't find a fault with that. I watched it in high definition. I wanted to give it all of its due, so to speak. And it's a fine-looking cartoon for being 78 years old. That's a very impressive feat, and I'll have to give it that. But I found the songs to be immemorable. Not too many this time, but, you know, immemorable. Nothing that I was going to sing along. In fact, the film ended and my mind was right back on Hakuna Matata. You know, something that I actually could at least get behind. A lot has evolved since then, in theory. Culturally, animation, entertainment, and otherwise. But calling this a classic, to me, is almost the same as me saying that Return of the Jedi is a classic. I think people just say that because it's one of the earlier Disney films, and we're supposed to revere Disney as the animation house. I don't think there's anything about this that really screams classic. It's just pleasant. Gentle and pleasant.
I think the story is classic, but not the movie. You know, just the Ugly Duckling flying
story, though.
Right. Well, but this is the flying elephant story.
Sure.
So
sure.
I just, the fact that we know, you know, Dumbo is a household name, even, you know, 78 years later. And that, by, I think the movie itself, no, but just kind of it's
yeah, a reputation. Why?
That's why. Exactly. An elephant movie should be what is it fun.
What is it about this, though, that has resonated for that long?
Because Dumbo's an insult name. You can call little kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Dumbo was my prime insult as a youngster.
I don't know. I mean,
I genuinely don't have an answer for this, because not that I have a whole lot of problems with the movie. It's fine. But I don't understand why it's had any kind of cultural cachet.
Well, it's I think it's because, one, it's Disney. Two, it popped up. You know, I had books of it, you know, and that with, you know, all the other Disney books that came out. And in a lot of ways, it's, you know, what Babe Ruth or Hulk Hogan, they're not necessarily the best of what they did, but you heard those names so many times throughout your life that to me, it's more that than anything
and
else.
That's what the feeling that I was getting from it. And that's why I mentioned the nostalgia of Star Wars. There's a nostalgia of Disney, too. And it doesn't mean that it's all good, for sure.
It's a triumph of marketing. Great marketing on the part of Disney to keep this alive for this long.
And RKO Pictures, I noticed that, too. Yeah. That was what came up in the beginning of the film. I know nothing, almost, of film history. Is there a congruence between RKO Pictures and Disney?
Just that they were distributing Disney before Disney became distributor themselves.
Okay.
And I think with RKO was there were one early on you could own movie theaters if you owned a movie company.
Yes.
And so movie companies bought up all the theater chains, and until they got broken up, you know, your best bet for distribution was to go through one of those companies.
That's interesting.
Yeah, things you learn. But yeah, Dumbo.
Not a classic.
Since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
What, dear? Grace! Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
What happened 30 years ago?
Two not significant things and one significant thing in theory, but maybe it shouldn't be. Movie called Crusoe. Aidan Quinn stars as Robinson Crusoe. It barely made any money. I didn't watch it, so be it. A movie called Sing, which is not the animated film or anything like that, but I don't remember who's even in it. But it did make like around $10 million. Have you seen Sing? No.
No.
Okay. Then we'll get to Heathers. Back in 2002. I had not seen this film. My fiancé at the time, whose name bore the same title, said, we should really just buy it. I mean, I'm sure it'll be great. And she bought it on DVD. We take it back and watch it and promptly wanted to light it on fire. And me more so than her. If I have been bad at reviewing Juno, okay, it is because I had this feeling of attacking me personally back in 2006, 2007, whenever it came out. But I was also annoyed with the cadence of the film at times. The second time around, it's not bad like I thought it was. And I understand now more about Diablo Cody because of this show. Heathers is like Juno if Juno took a shit and put it on peep. It's people saying vapid things with no point whatsoever, and the film has no heart. It's simply meant to be like, this is just who we are. It's nihilistic and destructive in terms of what it's about. I found Winona Ryder to be at her worst, and when Winona Ryder is at her worst, you definitely don't want to watch it because it's painstaking to your ears and your eyes. This is one of the worst things I've ever seen. I will not ever watch it again. It made it into my top 20 worst films of all time at the time, and it has stayed there since then.
I really like this movie. I was waiting for that. I really enjoy this movie. The caricatures and the dark, the super dark humor of this movie, it really hits a sweet spot with me. The funeral scene, especially, I'll just repeat to myself just randomly. Just I love my dead gay son. Just that line killed me then, and it kills me now. It's so dark and so wrong. And they went there 30 years ago, which is something I found fascinating. I think in many ways this movie was ahead of its time in terms of just being dark and disturbing and being about school violence, which is it predates the kind of school violence that we see today, which is kind of interesting. It's outsized. It's not meant to be taken, in a literal fashion. It's not meant to be treated in a literal fashion because all these characters are outsized caricatures, and all the set pieces, even the visuals of the movie, are all kind of blown up a little bit. The look of the movie is outside of reality in many ways, and I appreciate that the attention to detail in that to make this something almost cartoonish and dark and edgy and weird.
I haven't seen it.
What you're talking about is a perspective of when you see it. What do you bring to the movie? And reminding me about the school violence part of it, I wonder if I was just, like many, so sensitive to recent years' events, and seeing that is more something that just felt wrong, and therefore it might have affected my thoughts.
The plot is that the Winona Ryder is hanging out with a group of girls who are all named Heather. They're all the most popular girls in school, and she begins to become disenchanted with that. And she's becoming so disenchanted to it that she's really kind of starting in her mind to rebel against it. And then there's this guy played by Christian Slater who comes along who's truly rebelling against it by actually going ahead and beginning to murder the very popular people in the school, and taking her ideas, it's almost in a way kind of like Lords of Chaos. Honestly, she's kind of like the Hieronymus character, where she's got these ideas about like, yeah, I'd love to see them get killed, and I'd love to see them get what they deserve, and then Vark this guy comes along and actually starts doing it, and he starts staging it as if these girls have committed suicide, and in this bizarre and wonderful twist, suicide then becomes hip and popular because the popular kids are doing it. And that's kind of the dark and edgy part of this, is that the more this happens, these characters creating these suicides, suicide becomes popular.
God, this is like a Gen X movie.
Like I said, it's right in my wheelhouse.
Distant Reality Bites. Double feature. Oh, I'm kind of intrigued now.
Based on the way that you were explaining it, I'm like, he's giving Bob a film hard on.
Not that I want people to die, but
no, as soon as you said Lords of Chaos, I'm like, boop, there it goes.
You need to see that movie, though. I think it's
really good.
Oh, sure. It remains number one on, Amazon Watch.
Once it comes more to a reasonable price, it is a little high at the moment. God damn it, I almost played a podcast instead of getting my thing ready. My iPad's taking a shit, so now I have to use my phone for all the bumpers and stuff. But yeah, that is our show. Before we let you go, Josh, do you want to have a make your announcement?
Yeah, sure. Hey, I'm going to be leaving the show at the end of April. So once Endgame rolls around, I'll be exiting the stage right. From time to time, if these fine gentlemen would have me, I would...
No, this is it.
I tried to
we've been waiting for this day.
That is not true.
Throughout time, things that I might be able to orate on or provide the energy necessary to remember them culturally, such as Batman or... whatever the case may be. It seemed like a natural course of events. It had really come around to the end of my abilities, We've been doing this for me almost 6 years, and you guys for over 6 years. And these films are wonderful at times, and it's wonderful to talk about them. It's been such a pleasure being able to speak to something other than a wall. And that may not sound like much, but it truly is one of life's great joys for me. It has been and will continue to be. But my need for moving on and doing things a bit more homebound has come full circle. And the movies themselves aren't enrapturing me as much as they should. And there's no reason, then, that I should definitely keep going at it if it's not bringing me as much joy as it should. Plus, it seems like a natural course of events to end it when 89 is coming to an end as well. The 80s are such a thing that I like to fixate on because I had so much joy at certain moments then. I like to revisit that joy. It gives me a warm place to nest in. The 1990s were a different story, so it seems to make sense. And you gentlemen do a wonderful job. We'll get more into it towards the end there because I don't want to spill out everything right here. I need to speak coherently through Flickchart. But I have truly enjoyed our time. Like I said, one of life's great, great things that has happened to me. And it's just ready for me to move to a different thing. I can't keep up with what the experience demands of me. But you shall hear me from here on out until Endgame with my best side up. Especially this next week, we've got two Pet Cemeteries, we've got Shazam, it's a superhero film for Christ's sake, and Major League. Oh, Jesus. Now I've got a show boner.
And our classic is Dead Zone.
Yes,
another Stephen King film I've always wanted to see, and I never had a chance to see it. I watched like 10 minutes of it with my dad once on USA, and I was like, I want to watch this whole movie. But yeah, and I mean, my hope is that there's more moments where Josh does pop up here and there, you know, maybe two or three times a year, maybe more, maybe less, whatever he feels like doing. He'll have an open invitation, and we will continue the show, whether it's just the two of us or whether a third person comes in, we'll figure that out as we go. But we wish Josh nothing but the best, but we still have time. So we'll
I have that. Been and always shall be your number one fan. Take that, Jason.
And in a way, Josh won't. I mean, he'll probably pop around on our Facebook page and be around, and so he'll still be with us
until I get blocked by the admins.
You know me; I'm too lazy to take you off an admin.
Well, I'm sure that there is a Star Wars news limit to be shared to the group.
I'm not even positive if you go to our About Us tab if I ever put you all the way. That's how lazy I am. I'm not even sure we have anything on the About Us tab, to be completely honest with you.
Oops.
But who clicks on that anyway? But yeah, before we let you go all the way, I do want to thank our Patreon supporters. And if you're only here for Josh, we respect you dropping your Patreon.
No! That's
pledge.
Ridiculous. What have you been doing with your life? Are you in Canada? I'm kidding. I love you, Canada.
But at our key grip level, Charlie Messing and the Hall of Famer, Jason Bryant. And then another. Our character actors, Cousin Jeff, Christina Cato, and Josh Paul.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects level, Corey from Ivy Envy and Sarah Morrell.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer, Jason Mollett.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
Before you read the next one, the director of the stuff passed away this week. Yes, so honoring that clip, rest in peace, gentleman whose name I forgot.
And our movie stars, Dave Sievers and Uncle Jeff.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I hate critics.net/Patreon. That's where you can go to become a supporter. Also, if you click on the PayPal link and want to donate that way, you can do that as well. And then our podcast merch is at ihatecritics.net in the podcast merch tab. Any of those ways really help the podcast. And if you are on Patreon and your credit card is, if you got a new expiration date or a new card, please go and update that. We do have a couple members whose payments haven't gone through. So if you're meaning to do that, that's one thing. But if you're not, I'm just letting you know here. No judgments either way. Patreon can be kind of tricky with that way.
Ghosting on Patreon. You just don't change the credit card.
Eventually when I drop your name from the credits, you'll know who you are. But again, I'm lazy, so that might be a year and a half from now. Otherwise, I think that's it. We'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three best friends that anybody
can. Thanks for making that song a lie, Josh.
Oh, crap, I gotta redo a lot of things. Flick shirt has to change. It's gonna be a whole new show.
The self dismay that I'm currently experiencing is at an all time high.
We'll figure it out as we go.
By the way, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of one.
You're a beach bum.
All right.
Most of you probably aren't listening to this on April 1st, but that wasn't an April Fool's joke. He really is planning on leaving after Avengers.
Yeah.
If you were thinking that, I'm telling you this after the credits, when most of you turned it off, so I guess it doesn't really matter. Traffic or Rocky Balboa?
Traffic.
Traffic.
Agreed. Thor the Dark World or Cool Runnings?
Thor.
I'll go Cool Runnings. Dark World is my least favorite of the MCU films.
I'll go Cool Runnings as well. Rocky 3, X-Files, I Want to Believe.
Rocky 3 is Mr. T.
And Hulk Hogan, yes.
Yeah, all right, yeah, so I'll go Rocky 3.
See, if I didn't say Hulk Hogan, I
will go X-Files. I know what your answer is.
I like Eye of the Tiger. Come on. Alpha Dog or Brazil?
Oh, Alpha Dog is...
Justin Timberlake.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
That wasn't that good. What was the other one?
Brazil.
Terry yeah, Brazil. You.
Brazil. Weird movie.
This is kind of a pointless one. Shooter or Underworld?
Underworld.
I can't. Fishing with Gandhi. I can't in good conscience.
SWAT or A Bug's Life?
A Bug's Life.
Bug's Life.
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 or Sweet Home Alabama?
Oh, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Sweet Home Alabama is a flaming pile of garbage.
Brick or 54?
Rick?
Brick.
Oh, Brick. Yeah, Brick.
Although I don't remember being fond of Brick, it is that over 54.
Kill Bill Volume 2, Tombstone.
Kill Bill.
Kill Bill.
Princess Mononoke?
Princess Mononoke, a Miyazaki movie. I've actually seen that.
Or Goon.
I haven't seen Goon.
Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, I wish I would have watched that in the original Japanese, actually, because the dub over made it the typical type of experience that you would have with...
You can do that next year, actually, or later this year, actually.
Because it's coming locally. For the yeah. celebration of Miyazaki, yes. right? I like the visuals of that one. You know, it was kind of cool, and in a way, it's something of a Star Wars story. You know, it's about
I'll be right
sword
there.
Fighters and samurai. Yeah, I'm sure.
I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's way better than The Goon. The Goon's fairly entertaining for what it is.
Yeah.
Die Hard 2 or Hot Shots?
Huh, Hot Shots.
Yeah, it's Hot Shots, but just barely.
It's Hot Shots for me by a lot. I mean, that's my Naked Gun, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
The Amityville Horror with Ryan Reynolds or Big Daddy with Adam Sandler?
Amityville.
Amityville. That one wasn't as shitty as I thought
it was. It was pretty shitty.
It was shitty, but low expectations.
Adam Sandler. Come on.
Big Daddy's a better movie than the Amityville Horror. Sean, for the record, pick the Warrens over Sandler.
Be fair, I picked Ryan Reynolds over.
But it's Ryan Reynolds in the hilarious Amityville Horror. Iron Man 2 or Alice in Wonderland?
Iron Man 2.
Iron Man 2.
Which Allison? It was the Burton Allison?
No.
The original. Even one. Still, I was going to pick Iron Man 2, but.
Easy A or Black Swan?
Ooh, those are two really different but very good movies, but it's Black Swan.
I haven't seen Easy A, but I bet I would choose Black Swan.
Happy Gilmore or Beverly Hills Cop?
Beverly Hills Cop.
Agreed.
The Return of the King or Natural Born Killers? The Lord of the Rings movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one's better than Natural Born Killers. That's a pretty low bar.
I might go Natural Born Killers.
Step over low bars at my advanced age.
I get 2 out of 3. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or Shrek 2?
Shrek 2.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. How much do you like Shrek and your...
More than I should. But I do like... I'm going to go with Shrek, but I do like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I hate going against it. Pearl Harbor or 16 Candles?
16 Candles.
Oh, I should have saved the fishing with Gandhi. God damn it. Because Pearl Harbor sucks, but I miss you. Yeah, it's going to have to be the one that's not Pearl Harbor.
The Green Mile or Planet of the Apes, 1968?
Planet of the Apes.
Agreed.
Gone in 60 Seconds or Run Lola Run?
Run Lola Run.
Agreed.
Raging Bull, Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Raging Bull.
Just make it happen. Don't worry. Just skip right by me.
Oh, yeah. Men in Tights?
Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Yes, over Raging Bull.
Inception, Resident Evil, Apocalypse.
Inception.
Agreed.
The Firm, Total Recall. 90, Total Recall.
The Firm.
I'll take Total Recall here.
I'll go with The Firm. American Gangster, Unidentified Flying Mater. We're going to...
Yeah.
American Gangster, Naked Gun, 33 and a third, The Final Insult.
American Gangster.
It remains like the only Ridley Scott movie I haven't seen. So I don't know.
You'll like it. You should see it. I'll go American Gangster.
We have... You know what? While we're on the subject of Ridley Scott, I'll be really quick. Did you guys see the Alien play thing? All right, Bob, did you see the Alien play?
I sent out a game tonight, so I wasn't able to. I saw you sent us it, but I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I'm referring to the high school students that put on a full-on play of Alien.
I did see that it existed, yes.
And not only did Ridley Scott reach out to these kids with a handwritten letter and everything... saying, way to go, I hope your next one, the Gladiator. Huh, whatever. But Sigourney Weaver...
Josh did a mime jerk-off motion.
Sigourney Weaver also was involved and sent them a video. Thanks for that. I mean, that's really awesome. And Alien's about to have its 40th anniversary this year. There's 9 short films that are set in the Alien universe. It's like actual canon. They've got some heavy hitters involved here, like up-and-coming real filmmakers doing this stuff. Bill Paxton's son is in one of them, too. And they're releasing one every week. So I really enjoyed the first one. Visually, it's very, very cool. Very Ridley Scotty. So, you know, I'm on board. I know no one really cares. But, like, in terms of cool stuff that's set in... We don't get that kind of thing in franchises that we love, you know? Maybe the Marvel one-offs, but this is a 9-10 minute film. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's neat, especially if you get... You know, you don't have a studio probably telling you what you can and cannot do.
Exactly.
Which is always a nice thing. Oh, let's see, one more. One more good one. One more dead air. We'll get there. That's not funny enough.
One of these days, Jesus Christ. He's gonna find the blood.
Arthur Anaconda. What the? That's not even funny.
He's trying to. He's looking for something that Adam Sandler can win,
or something. That he
it's his holy grail
control.
Of this game. Is.
Well, I mean, Adam Sandler won, but you just picked, you guys are wrong. Big Daddy is better than whatever movie we had. Amityville Horror, E.T. or The Karate Kid.
Oh, you did this on purpose.
Well, when I forgot to record when you said Karate Kid was better than Rocky.
But wait, Josh. Oh. The Karate Kid!
Oh, really? That's your choice?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, he likes both movies a lot. Yeah.
So it doesn't. I have to literally go by my numbering system here. E.T. is.
Oh, wow. Here I was taking your side.
I appreciate that. That gives me some good vibes for tomorrow.
I mean, the Karate Kid is a better director.